Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have not a chef, but a food stylist for major motion pictures and television talking about how she approaches food styling the same way as a restaurant kitchen. She is a culinary director, producer, consultant, and the food stylist for the show, Julia. It's Christine Tobin. Christine, welcome to the podcast. I was allowed a sneak peek of the new season of Julia. So if you hear my stomach growling, it is because everything looks absolutely mouthwatering. Thanks to you. What's it been like working on this project?
It's been just a once in a lifetime opportunity and experience. It's a full circle moment for me as someone that grew up here in New England and grew up at the base of the television stand as a kid. And, you know, she was always part of my, you know, upbringing, but also my piqued interest in food, and to then lead my life in the food world, in restaurant work and such, to tell this, you know, part of her grand story is quite remarkable. And I pinch myself all the time. I'm a very lucky person, but I feel like the job was given to the right person, given how much she's a part of me.
Yeah. I mean, as a Boston native, I have a feeling that Julia Child is to you what Dolly Parton is to East Tennessee. You mentioned that you kind of remember that being on in the background, you know, during your childhood. What are your memories of her and that show growing up?
Yeah, well, I grew up outside Boston, and PBS, you know, WGBH, PBS was our form of entertainment. So it starts with Sesame Street and it goes to Zoom. And then each weekend, she would be on right after Bob Ross, and Bob Ross was a painting instructor. Yeah. So I would sit on the carpet and with my coloring books or whatnot, and my dad's sitting there with his paper. And that's how I started each Saturday morning, and then led into, you know, my going to school and home economics and coming home and cooking those dishes for my family on a Sunday, say. But in my head, I was speaking as if I was Julie. I would stare out the window and talk like Julie would talk on her show. So I would emulate her. And what's interesting, yeah, and then, you know, my dad was my family were big home cooks, my mom in particular being a Sicilian, and my Nana, who lived with us most of my teenage years and childhood, that there's always this deep appreciation for food. And it was my dad, though, who wanted to go a little outside the box and would turn to Julia. And he would go to her, you know, cookbook signings and sort of events and such. And he was just such a fan. And he would howl with laughter at each show. And so, and I just, you know, that was just such an endearing part of her delivery, but also how I saw my dad enjoy her message and just got inspired and thought, why not? I'm going to make duck l'orange. And then I could still taste the duck l'orange. And my mom would set the beautiful dining room table. And that's all that we had on a dead end street. You know, we were a middle-class family, working family. And that was their way, with no restaurants in their tiny town. That's how they chose to entertain themselves and learn.
I mean, it seems like, you know, she was just this magnetic personality that everybody, like, as you kind of outlined, everybody was drawn to, male, female, old, young. What was it about her and just how she presented these recipes that was so endearing?
She's clearly had a tenacious spirit and but also so forgiving and gave allowance to those at home to, you know, be okay with the mistakes, and that even the most professional chefs make mistakes, and that's where the learning comes in. And I say on set all the time, like, happy accidents are sometimes these beautiful moments that lead you into a different way of discovering the food or discovering something about yourself. So I think that's my takeaway with her, and being here in Boston and in the food, you know, food world, especially when I go to my vendors and such, like, everyone has a story about Julia. Everyone either grew up, you know, skateboarding past her house in Cambridge, or worked for her, or just, you know, met her, or gave her, you know, handed her butcher order at Savinor's. Like, she's a rich part of our community here in New England, especially Boston and Cambridge. And she's just the best. And we all strive to, you know, make her proud and make those who worked with her proud. And I take a lot of responsibility. You know, I feel responsible for that in my small part of telling her story, because she's just that special.
Yeah, no, she absolutely is. And, you know, when you talk about this approach to cooking that she had, where, you know, accidents are okay, and she really, you know, kind of embraced those mistakes. When you're at home, do you, and you're cooking, you know, in your own kitchen, do you kind of mirror that approach?
Well, so here at home, I'm a single mom of two kids, and I keep things really simple. But when they were younger, I actually was quite more ambitious for some, and now they take part in helping me prepare food. So that's been a lot of fun to sort of turn and teach and answer questions. And I'm somebody, I think, similar in the sense of Julia Child, that I get a lot from just being an observer. So I just ask a lot of questions of others, probably more than looking at a cookbook at this, you know. And when I would work in restaurants, I would just watch someone execute a dish over and over and over again and ask the question, then come home and prepare it and take notes on it, and then go back the next shift and say, hey, I made. So, like, I would always sort of gravitate towards that learning and then execute at home. So I still do that a bit. Again, I just keep things super simple, you know, nowadays, but I just think, and I'm very sort of instinctual as a cook, similar. And I think that's the only similarity, I guess.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. You know, obviously, you are clearly very inspired by Julia, like so many other people. How did you get to the place that you are now doing food styling for film and TV? Was it the food world that kind of brought you in? And how did film kind of come into play?
Yeah, great. So I am a trained artist. So I went to school for fine arts, and I paid my way and paid for school through working in restaurants since the age of 17. It wasn't until I was and I've always followed my stomach. You know, I was that kid eating three helpings every night and helping my family cook. And I was always in charge of salad. And it wasn't until I worked at Oleana in Cambridge that I saw the power of the food on a plate as a medium that Chef Anna Sartoun executed over and over and over again. And that's when something lit inside of me as a gallery artist at that point, and just a home cook, that just from observation would come home. I would ask a lot of questions of Anna and Cassie and Chef Nookie, all these people, to and come home and sort of teach myself these skills. And it was her first cookbook, Spice, that was my first experience as assisting her as a food stylist. And from there, I went on to assist all the grand dames in New York. I would travel from Boston to New York to assist on various publications, commercials, et cetera. And fast forward to when I'm 39, 40, mm-hmm. I got a call based on a referral from one of my mentors to work on my first movie, which was Labor Day. And it was there that I was trained by the grand dame herself, Susan Spungen. So, you know, that led on to, you know, those departments. So I fall under the prop department in my union, that, you know, that's where I became food stylist of IET 481. And so I went on to now work at 20 something films here in New England and beyond. So as you will see in season two of Traveling to France. And so that's, you know, I love the medium of food on film. I love the beat of it, the chaos of it, the adrenaline it takes to achieve it. And it's, to me, it's just like restaurant work, and it's just under a different context, but mm-hmm. I operate as if I'm running a restaurant, and I have a front of a house team and a back of the house team. So, you know, it's seeing the power of food over and over again through the execution of a chef, but also as a server, because that's what I was mm-hmm. for many, many years, is seeing the joy or surprise or the anticipation of me presenting a dish to them, and seeing that and having that exchange with them, and also teaching them about various, you know, especially at Oleana, she was one of the very, very first people here in our country to talk about labneh and sumac and za'atar and bring all these flavors from a different part of the globe, similar to Julia, to to our, you know, to our food community. And so I take all of those learnings and experiences onto set with me each day as I work in this medium of film. But in school, in college, I would study, you know, film and to like set like scenic classes. Uh-huh. But I didn't even know that there was even a film community here, frankly, and or something that I could even follow through. And I just focused on being a gallery fine artist. So to be able to really utilize everything is such a privilege. And it just, I'm very lucky to say that each day that I'm working, because I didn't put any of my student loans to waste. I'll put it that way. You know, it all just makes sense for me. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell that your love is genuine for the work that you do. Just hearing you speak about it. Is that something unique to food styling, kind of treating it as if you are in a restaurant? Is that something unique to you, or is that something you've learned, you know, from other food stylists throughout the world?
Well, I think I blasted through that belief for myself and how I perform, mm-hmm. because, you know, up until that phone call for Labor Day, I was primarily a still photography food stylist, which has a very different approach. And when you're working in film, it goes by, or cooking show, like it goes by so fast. It's all about just being super uber prepared. And when it comes to that final moment, that's when your food styling techniques come into play. But it's not up until that very last minute that the camera potentially will kiss your dish that, and you have to expect, like, you're not sitting there for 6 hours preparing the perfect dish. You're given mm-hmm. literally like seconds.
Wow.
And so I designed those, you know, around those foods with my knowledge of various ingredients and know what will work, and also advocate for those that might not work, but how to make it work. So there's just sort of a million, you know, different hats that I wear to do food styling, but it is, in theory, you wanted everything to look incredibly beautiful and pornographic, right? But really, I've come to learn that that little mess and a little drip and those like moments where the buttercream on a doll cake will sort of soften because it's so hot and humid and there's no control over it. Like just being able to let it go. And frankly, that to me reads just so beautifully on a screen, because that is what naturally happens with food, and not everything should look as if it came out, popped out of a mold. And I only really, I mean, I'm happy to play with, you know, armatures and styrofoam to make fake things, but it's not in my, I work with real food. And so that comes with its challenges.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, as you kind of outlined there, I mean, food is very temperamental, whether it's, you know, melting under a hot set or, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, do you have little tricks and things that you do to kind of mitigate that? Or like you said, you kind of just let it happen and go with it?
Well, Julie is a very wonderful experience on many fronts. And one of it is, you know, come with having a second season and having these growing relationships with various departments and department heads. I rely a lot on the assistant directors on set, and they alternate between episodes, at least this, you know, I'll use season two as an example, but so it's just all in my communication. And I, you know, we usually have maybe say 10 days in between each episode. So I am someone that will prepare immediately and just at least get these thoughts out and sort of outlines out to the prop department and the set deck department to start that conversation. We have culinary meetings that we bring in the director, sometimes the talent, if there's choreography or coaching. And we just sort of almost over communicate, because as we No, food on camera and film especially should be treated like a car crash. And it takes, I'd rather be everyone knowing what to expect than the day of or moments before, like something. So just to make it as seamless as possible, because there is going to be something, you know, and it might not be, could be just, a, you know, something with lights or something with some hair, whatever. You just always want to be prepared, at least for me, that's my responsibility. So we have a liaison that goes and gathers all the set dressing and props, and they lay it out on a table outside of our kitchen. So we're just like, at this point, such a well-oiled machine, my team and I, that it's almost like our own sort of mutant hybrid of operators, because it's really grown and changed from the work on Julia, especially. And I bring, since Julia, I've worked on other shows, and I execute exactly the same. We hop in as a team, and we just bang it out.
How different is it, you know, food styling for a very food centric show like Julia versus maybe a film or a series that simply has food scenes in it, you know, where it's not as much of the focus?
You just respect that, because sometimes, you know, there's nothing more heartbreaking than having a beautiful spread that's part of a scene, and you're just peeking in at the monitor and saying the camera's not even getting over there. But you know, part of the beauty of what I do on film is that you're there to add that last layer of the set dressing. So you're enhancing that space. So when the actors pop in to do their jobs, like their, that food gives off, as we know, like such a wonderful energy in its presence and really sets a tone, just as much as the curtains, just as much as the beautiful costumes and hair, especially in period pieces. So I think that it just adds, you know, even just that layer, last layer, and a bit of richness to the space. But yeah, it you have to, I try to let it go. And I know that it has its, however the camera wants to, you have to let it just lie with the director and the camera at that point. Mm-hmm. And then you see it on the screen, you're like, oh, it makes sense. And that happened when seeing the screeners for season two of Julia. And I'm so pleased that a lot of the times it's not in your face. It's not crazy inserts, which I love to do as a food stylist, but as a food maker and having it being food being so participatory amongst its cast, I rose up and let some of that control go. And it led to some really beautiful images.
No, absolutely. It is beautiful. But like you said, it's very natural. It's not forced. It's just part of the set. And I think that that is very much a testament to you and your team, as you mentioned. I'm so curious about how it all works. Like, can you help me picture the set? Do you have a working kitchen with your team, like next to where, you know, the actual set is? Like, how does that all come to light?
Well, we're very lucky, Julia, that the production has been nothing but so supportive with the food, the culinary department, that I was asked season one to draw on a piece of paper and hand it to construction. And it was approved and we were built this beautiful space. I wanted windows to be installed so I could see out into the, you know, it's a dark space, but you could see the red lights when they're, or just even the motion of people. Like I know when something's been cut or a next scene is being pulled up, but also for people to see in, to see us working, because similar, like that's part of the experience. Mm-hmm. And so it's led on for so many wonderful like crew members to come in and introduce themselves or say, hey, I made, you know, what was on set yesterday for my family, or come in and ask questions. So for me, I just lead from how I've learned in that respect, you know, by being an observer and a bit of a sponge and asking questions and being inspired by food. But in the interior of the kitchen, which was in between the three major sets, so Henri, the restaurant Henri Sank, Julia's home, the child home, and the GBH French Chef set. So we were pretty central to those stages and two swinging doors on either side of the kitchen that we pushed in and out of. And we had an industrial space with an industrial walk-in, and we had a food truck that sounds like we were spoiled, but I mean, it was every inch, every piece of equipment, every inch and usage of a truck just led for us to do some really biggest food scenes and the job. And then we have landing pads, you know, and then sometimes you're camping when you're on location and you don't mm-hmm. have a truck. On other jobs I've been on, you show up like a caterer, you prep out and everything's on ice and you keep things safe and lots of folding tables. And, you know, we call that camping.
That sounds like some fun camping, actually, to be honest. When we come back, Christine tells us what it was like recreating the dishes from Julia's show, The French Chef. So stick around.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're recreating some of these dishes from Julia's, you know, original show, The French Chef, did you have to deviate at all from some of her actual recipes so they were more camera ready, or did you kind of stay true to the originals?
Yeah, I always stay true to the originals. I never, ever, ever, ever. And, you know, I would always think of the Food Network. I'm like, someone, I don't want to get called out. Like, nobody, everyone's going to be what I don't. I just keep it simple. And I go by Julia and some Good Beck's recipes and play it safe. But no, and I'm lucky when I go through, because I'm, as soon as I see the script, I go to the cookbook, and she's made it so easy for us as food makers that I'm able to sort of pick apart the unless it's something scripted in action, I have the ability to, in my meetings, to make suggestions of what would work best. And ultimately, it's up to Sarah. So Sarah comes in, who's a natural cook, and I'm just, will stand there with my, you know, hands behind my back and just be there for if she has questions. But we work very well together as a team, and I'm there to support her. So that's how the French Chef set works. But she really is a leader in that regard.
You know, in this season in particular, you had to style like a variety of things, you know, the home cooked meals, the restaurant meals, you know, Julia in the markets, you know, cultural foods. How did you have to kind of shift your approach from one scene to the next?
Just being hyper focused. And also, again, it's all instinctual. It's all having had the experiences of being in various places around food that when I'm at a location scout, which is super duper important for me to be in the space, understand what the food, how the food is to be presented, you know, beyond the action in the script or those particular dishes, but how to then flesh out the design of a menu so it looks, you know, lavish or it looks set, whatever the assignment is. Mm-hmm. But I just hyper prepare. And there are days that we're in three different locations, two different locations. I rely a lot on my mood boards. So that's one of my favorite parts of my process. So my team, we have, you know, we call meetings and they're prepping me out, and we have, I call them kits in the walk-in, and we just grab and go. So we're just always ready to, we prepare ourselves to be ready for the execution of various things, but visually and sort of in the research of it, I just kind of make it up as I go. I mean, and I'm so lucky to have that ability. You know, they give me a lot of freedom.
Mm-hmm. And obviously Julia herself was so inspired, you know, by her time in France. What was it like for you to kind of be in that environment, creating your food creations?
Oh, it was crazy. it was just I would touch things. I, you know, especially when we're in the South and we're at the set in particular for Simca's house, and there's all these olive groves and horses outside the perimeter of the house, and I would just touch the leaves and really want to be part of the nature of it, to understand it. I think I had my assistant Rachel Michael with me, which was incredible and much needed. So much of how I would work here you know, there's really no difference in camping. You know, we were trained to sort of, you know, get the call and jump right into it. But there was something really just so special about going to the markets there and retrieving all the, these ingredients that she gravitated towards and that inspired her in the places that she visited there that made her come and cook this incredible masterpiece and her show. So I, there was not a second that Rachel and I did not feel incredibly grateful for that experience. And I think because I've already established the approach in my food making and design in that sort of culinary storytelling of it, that it just felt very natural. And, you know, quickly the set for Simca, where they pressed the olive oil, there was also a small garden, and the homeowner invited me to use what was in her garden for that, for that epic feast that we see. And so that even like more so just was such a gift to actually use the fruits and vegetables from where we were shooting. So it, it was just a wonderful few days of being there and to then share that with the guests that are around the table surrounding all this beautiful food. Like it just made such a wonderful evening for everybody. And I do feel and see that resonate, you know, in that particular scene. So, you know, I tend to just tune in and follow my stomach wherever I go. And France was just a very unique, hopefully not the last experience, but yeah, I mean, I like Julia Child herself, like I just learned a lot.
Yeah, no, I mean, it, it seems like it was such a special experience. And that definitely, I think, came to light, you know, on the screen watching that scene. I have to ask one question, you know, that me as maybe it's just because I'm hungry right now, but who, I mean, who eats all of the leftover food? Is it even edible by the time you guys are done shooting, or, you know, or is the crew able to kind of partake?
Keeping this in mind, we always have resets, replenishing, and we are always keeping the food safety in mind that we will pull things right when we know, you know, we just, and knowing that we're not going to waste it.
Sure.
And, you know, if it's sometimes the cat, I don't force food on anyone, but sometimes the cast will come and ask, oh, hey, you know, I'm having a visitor, or I would love, you know, to bring some of this home. But we have like on set, we have a communal fridge, for example. So cast and crew can come and take containers out, the, you know, the brown recycling containers.
Yep.
Or we just say, go for it, you know, and for the Bouche Noël, for example, there was just lining, you know, the tables and people just take big chunks and wrap it with tin foil. So yeah, no, it's food brings community and every single person on our crew is always welcome to take or ask for more and ask for recipes and such. And we also have a food compost program. Mm. So we make sure that, you know, all the, you know, scrapes and stems and knobs are, you know, have a place to go to. But no, so it's led to a very enjoyable work environment and a source of happiness, as all kitchens are, you know.
Well, I think Julia would be very proud of all of that, people coming together and enjoying the food, you know, even as they are working on a show about her. You know, we had a chance to interview Todd Shulkin of the Julia Child Foundation during season one of the show. What was it like working closely with her foundation to stay authentic to who she was, both in her personal and professional life?
Well, with Todd, I spoke with Todd for the first time last year while I was in France. Mm-hmm. And I just keep my notes. I'm so grateful that he is a massive part of the support and like the big brother of this production and this story. I aim to make everyone there proud, and him especially. And I keep my nose to the ground and just do my job. And I know that, and as I said before, like just keeping very, very tight and true to the writings and of her recipes, just to protect her, but and Simone, but also to protect myself and my team. That, you know, knowing that there is a responsibility in this part of her. And but other than that, I rarely have the need to reach out to him. But he's just again the big brother, and I know I can if I ever needed to.
Absolutely. You know, and there's also a lot of commentary in the show about feminism and, you know, the complicated dynamics of women in the workforce. How do you feel that Julia and other media trailblazers paved the way for you and what you do today?
This is a good one, especially since I've worked in restaurants, you know, for a big chunk of my life. I think it's with her tenacity. It's with her convictions and her belief in herself. I think that, you know, clearly like charged her through rooms and in front of people. I think my takeaway is, because I'm living it, and especially at my point of life, you know, I'm the same exact age Julia was and have all this rich experience. And then there's a place of pause. And how do you trampede forward when you're getting hit by lightning? And that lightning is inspiration and just like a gut knowing that you have something important to share. And you might not be able to put your finger on it, but there's something, there's a fire inside, and it feels very different than when you're 20 something and you have the same, you know, ideas generating, but something. It's not so impulsive at this age. It's something that is just really deep. Again, clearly I'm in it. So, but I feel that standing shoulder to shoulder with other women, being heard and seen and doing and being that mirror for others is probably the most important. I think that being told we don't know what to do with you because you have so much experience or too much experience or different experience, or you're just a chameleon, does not necessarily mean that it's a bad thing. It just means that you have a few different other paths to investigate. And I don't know if this is fully on point with your question, but it's clearly on my mind as someone who is a mentor to others, but also, that's like such a privilege to have these young people reach out to me, like cold email me and ask questions. And that's my responsibility and privilege to give advice. And that doesn't end here. And I turn to my mentors still, and mentorship is like really super important for growth and not necessarily to get you ahead, but just to be there in partnership with your journey. And that's in the food world or anything. And I think that this is a really interesting time it's always an interesting time with food, but food on film in particular, because there's so much more attention to it. But I also think, and I feel a great sense of responsibility of how to share the knowledge, train people, so when they show up, they're just fully prepared.
Yeah.
So,
no. I mean, no, that was beautiful. I mean, you made me tear up for sure.
Oh,
no, seriously, I think that is like such an important message. And I guess on that note, like, what advice do you have for other women in the industry who are maybe, you know, coming up right now?
It's just such an interesting time, because I'm coming out of like years of being super duper busy. And as most food makers know, like you can't be on your phone and on Instagram and taking pictures. Like your hands are oily, wet. You're going to hurt your. So to come into this in this pause moment and sort of catch up and see like so much energy being generated through these little teeny squares is fascinating to me. And I'm feeling more comfortable in the idea of the tool of it, but there's nothing more important than getting in front of people, reaching, cold calling people, asking for apprenticeships, internships, assistant work, and getting yourself on an actual set in a way, there's a beauty of working at your window, and I love it. It's so artistic. It's so creative. It's so inspired. But I think the more FaceTime people can have with each other, especially in the collaboration that food is as a, as just a, as a collective, is should not be a lost art, because your person is, and how you show up and how you work with others is like 96% of the job, more so than how you chiffonade, you know, for me, at least. And I say this because I'm terrible at social media. I wish I wasn't, but now with this time, I'm much more prepared in my convictions and having reaching out and having conversations and flesh out what's part of me. And that's part of the journey. But yeah, I love these people who will reach out and grow this niche craft of food on film, because it, you know, from food and literature to food in television and film, and it's like, it's not going, food's never going away.
No.
And a fascination, obsession with it. But I think to have it being a growing and observed craft in that visual storytelling is really exciting. And I'm proud to have been a part of it first. I mean, I've been doing this now 13 years. So I'm curious to see where it leads to. And I welcome, you know, writers to come and share their work and get feedback. Like that stuff that generates lightning inside of me, because that's how it started with me, as, you know, while working at Oleana. It's like something just switched on and I started paying attention to more food heavy films, you know, the Babette, the Tampopo, the Thief, the Wife and Her Lover, like all these films that just led on this really crazy journey that I was not expecting, but it makes total sense. And my advice would be just keep yourself open, because you just don't know when something's going to fall. And it just makes, it's so like abstract the way I'm describing it.
No, but I like,
just keep yourself open. And there's not just one direct way to get to the end result, and just be around people as much as possible. Cause now we can.
Yeah.
For a while we couldn't, but, and I love the events that I see happening around food. That's just like so interesting. And like food is sculpture, and you know, food is as these massive, like gorgeous tablescapes that I see this a lot in New York. I mean, invite me. I would love to come and be your cheerleader. And, you know, that inspires me to do the jobs that I'm hired to do. And we'll just kick it back to each other.
I love that. I love that. That's fantastic advice. And thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to chat with us today. We are going to finish things off with a few rapid fire questions. And then we have one final question for you before we let you go. All right. Rapid fire round. Your IMDb, quite impressive. Do you have a favorite film or show that you've worked on?
Besides Julia? Can I say
something? No, you can say Julia first, but yeah, whatever, maybe, yeah, whatever's second.
I would say my experience on Little Women was the single most incredible experience, seeing the power of food with these sisters, the March sisters, and the ability and freedom to have in that design of those moments in that rendition of beautiful story. So, and that's led me into how I approach food, you know, moving forward from that.
Okay. Rate your own cooking skills on a scale of 1 to 10.
I mean, I'm always learning, and I'm not a trained chef. I'm going to say like an 8.25.
Okay. I like that. Tools you always have handy on set.
A variety of spoons.
Okay. Your favorite type of food or cuisine to style?
Anything that has an architectural element.
Oh, okay. Like what?
Just even a salad can be architectural.
Okay.
You know, I love texture, I love color. I mean, those are sort of go-tos, but I love when designing and executing a tablescape, preparing and presenting foods that have an architectural, like a cityscape, like just has height and depth of field and all of that.
All right. Favorite Julia Child recipe.
Oh, okay. So, oh, geez. I thought I had it open. Okay. So there's this one recipe that came later, not in the French Chef, but it was these stuffed peppers with a cheese mixture that you'll see in a point of season two that you then bake and you serve with a frise salad with lard on. And I can share it with you. I think it's from the Way to Cook cookbook. Yes, because it's right in front of me. The Way to Cook cookbook. That's my favorite Julia Child recipe.
It's
delicious and fresh and like definitely her.
Okay. Favorite Boston food spot?
I will say Oleana in Cambridge.
Of course. And a food that you hope to never style again?
Oh, I'm going to say char Twinkies. And you'll have to tune in to season two of Julia to know what a char Twinkie is.
Okay. That's a great tease. I love that. All right. Final question. This is not rapid fire. We just want to know what would be on the menu for your personal perfect food day. So we want you to take us through your ideal breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. You can travel, time travel. You know, there are no rules for this. Calories obviously don't count. Just your ideal set of meals for one day.
Okay. So I'm going to choose one meal.
Okay.
Because I love being home with my two children who are now teenagers, and they're just like the best. And since they were babies, they always ask me for crepes. And when for some reason, I was able to do them like spitfire every morning before school. But now it's like a weekend thing. So my day would be like an early morning rise. It's like a blizzard out, but like a soft snowfall.
Mm.
And I present them crepes in front of the fire in the living room, and we have our little TV, you know, our little tabletop coffee table. And I set out like a really pretty spread, and I always light a candle. And this actually is fat. I do this. Time is short and they're growing up, and I wish I could do it every day as I and just have like these warm crepes that take forever until I can finally sit down and share it with them, like they're already halfway done. And they always use Nutella, and Charlotte always likes to put the squeeze of lemon on it. Lots of confectioner sugar ends up on the rug. And always hot chocolate and with fresh whipped cream. And we just sit and are very leisurely about the breakfast, and that breakfast could be at 11 o'clock in the afternoon. And then we're just sort of stuck there and let it just sort of sit for a while and relish in that moment. And there's no rush.
Yeah.
So I think that is my perfect day.
And yeah.
And hopefully I pulled something from the freezer to make, you know, say Julia Child's beef bourguignon and something that could sit and cook slowly, and we'll just do it all over again. You know, wipe the confectioner sugar still might be on the rug.
Sure.
If we just have just a leisure, quiet, but inspired day.
It sounds perfect. And you painted a gorgeous picture that I can absolutely, you know, see in my head. So it sounds perfect. And thank you so much for sharing that and all of your stories with us. We really appreciate it and look forward to season two.
Wow. Thank you so much. This is incredible.
You can see Christine's incredible work in action on the 8-episode Max original comedy, Julia, premiering Thursday, November 16th on Max. You can also listen to Dishing on Julia, the official Julia companion podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts. Host Carrie Diamond talks to the creators and creatives behind Julia, the series, as well as the culinary superstars who share their connection to the one and only Julia Child. There are new episodes each week after the show airs on Max. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.